and welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay, and in our cool basement jazz studio today, we've got author of The Roar of the Lionesses, the upcoming Pride of the Lionesses, and what I think should be a trilogy after that one, Victory of the Lionesses. Do we dare dream? It's Dr. Carrie Dunn. Hello.
Hello.
I hope I predicted the next title of your book correctly.
I think you've just made me have to write another book.
And alongside her, it's Brazilian football expert, Arsenal Women Askcast host and all-round footballing guru, it's Tim Stillman.
Hello there.
Tim, my gosh. Oh my gosh, there are surprises in store today. The quarterfinals are finished and the final four remain. But who joined USA and England in making it through? Well, first up, an upset in the rankings. Stone the Crows, celebrate the Swedes. Germany have been sent packing from the Women's World Cup. 2-1 to Sweden in this one.
Blackstenius was looking forward. It comes to Rolfa, header, save, rebound, goal! Blackstenius and Sweden lead!
A classy goal from Lena Magol put the Germans ahead early on. And we all thought the writing was on the wall. How wrong we were, though. 6 minutes later, Sweden equalised. Great shot from Sofia Jakobsen, who then played a key part in the second goal, which fell to the feet of Stina Blackstenius for the winner. Sweden make the semis. Germany are out. So the Germans, no longer Sweden's bogey team then. The hex that meant Sweden had failed to win a major competition match against Germany in 24 years is lifted. Hurrah! But how did they do it, Carrie?
Well, it was very interesting to watch the way that Sweden approached this. They went for a very direct approach. Then Germany's defence, and Tim and I will talk about this off air, even though they haven't conceded during the World Cup, they're actually quite shaky if you put them under pressure. And I was suggesting that maybe it's the German aura of efficiency and defensive excellence that's been repelling goals up until this point. But Sweden just really applied the pressure. Lots of long balls forward, lots of pace, and Germany fell apart.
Well, Tim, the match certainly surpassed our expectations goal-wise, but was the quality more than you expected?
I think so, yeah, from Sweden. And actually, Carrie was talking about the aura of kind of German efficiency keeping teams out. I think, you know, we think of Sweden as quite a defensive team. We think of them as the team of Nilla Fischer, of Caroline Sager, you know, very, very solid, difficult to break down. But what I was pleasantly surprised by, and I think Sweden were quite right to do this, with that kind of three they have behind Blackstenius, Aslani, Jakobsen, Rolfo, that they've got real pace on the counter-attack. I was really pleased to see them go for Germany, actually. Maybe the fact that they went a goal down meant that they kind of had to.
Well, this is the first time, I think, isn't it, that a side who's gone a goal down has then come back to win. Certainly at these quarterfinals, I'm not sure how far back that goes from memory, but quite a feat for Sweden to achieve. And Jakobsen, she was absolutely key for them, wasn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. Just every time Sweden kept playing the ball into space, and we know Germany like to push those fullbacks up nice and high, you really sensed that Sweden had a plan, because quite often they weren't hitting those players to feet. They were just hitting the ball into space, and Germany leaves so much of it. We saw that in their first game against China. China exposed them again and again by playing the ball into those areas, and I was really glad to see Sweden do it, because if I was playing against Germany, that's what I think I would try to do.
Just you on your own, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Lump the ball up and you run off.
And then I run off.
Tim Stillman running up. Stillman again on the ball. Stillman two. Stillman on the ball. Yes, fascinating insight into how the brain of Tim Stillman works there. Well, I can confirm that Sofia Jakobsen's strike was the first goal that Germany had conceded in the first half of a Women's World Cup since the 2003 final against, you guessed it, Sweden. So it all comes around in the end, doesn't it? You mentioned Rolfo there, Tim. Yellow card for her means that she'll miss the next match. We will move on to that a little bit later, but that will be a shame. We saw Marijan on for Germany with her broken toe.
Oh my goodness. This was... When I saw her come on after halftime, I just thought, this is just desperation from Germany. She's kind of the player that's had so much weight of expectation put on her. They've obviously missed her during the tournament. And to bring on a half-fit Marijan at halftime just shows that Germany were basically out of ideas. They didn't know what else they could do apart from bring on poor injured Jennifer Marijan.
What else went wrong for the Germans for you, Tim?
I kind of look at Alexandra Popp's role at the moment, and she hasn't really impressed me in this World Cup. You know, she's obviously got a fantastic history, a great player, but, you know, this German team, they look to me, when I look at Germany at their best, they're mobile. Players like Schüller, Linda Dorman, Dabritz, Marijan, when she's actually got two good feet. And I think that they're quite an interchangeable team. And I just think Alexandra Popp, they played her in a slightly deeper role today in midfield. I'm not sure she really fits into that anymore. And I think the reason they brought Marijan on was just because the ball just seemed to get stuck almost at times.
They brought Oberdorf on, didn't they? A 17-year-old. I mean, this, you know, again, is a sign of desperation. They'd made all their subs by about the 70th minute. On comes Oberdorf, 17-year-old. What's she going to do? And that actually forced, well, the instruction then was for Pop to play further up.
I think the Oberdorf substitution is actually more understandable than the Marijan one in some ways, because she's unexpected, but also she has toes. But, you know, I feel quite bad for Alexandra Popp. What a bad day for her, slated by Stillman and punched in the head by Hedvig Lindahl.
Well, this is a massive shock for Germany. So let's get a Deutschland perspective from Ellen Hanisch from Fußballthesen.com. Ellen, thanks for joining us. What's the reaction to this in Germany like?
The main reaction is, of course, disappointment, because it was not a good game from Germany. Nevertheless, I noticed a bit of complaining about decisions from the referee because of a not given penalty. There was a situation when Lindahl hit Pop with her arm or with her fist or whatever it was. But I personally don't think it was a penalty, but it's discussed in German TV. And also before the first goal from Sweden, there was a foul on Magul and they kept on playing. And that's also not... Yeah, they discuss about it, but so, I think it's fair. It's fair. It was a fair game from Sweden, and we lost.
How much of a surprise is this result to the German fans and German media? Is it a huge surprise, or is there kind of a part of you that's thinking, well, this is maybe the result of a German team that's not quite there yet, having had a manager only in the job for 6 months or so?
I think it's a surprise for the fans, because before the game I was a bit worried that everyone expected an easy win for Germany because of the history of matches against Sweden. So we had, I think, 28 matches against Sweden and we won 20 of them, and that was the main tone in media. We didn't concede a goal until today.
Until the Sweden one, yeah.
So that was a bit, but it was a bit of a surprise that we haven't conceded a goal until now, because we have a very, very good goalkeeper, but the defense is not good and struggled a lot. And I think today, Martina Voss-Tecklenburg, the manager, she made some unexpected changes in the formation, and it didn't work out.
It's interesting because after France exited on Friday night, their manager Karine Diacre just came out and said that it was a failure. Will the Germans be speaking as strongly about Germany's exit from the World Cup? Will they speak in those terms?
No. I don't think so. I haven't heard it yet. Mm-hmm. I heard Martina Voss-Tecklenburg in the post-match interview, and she was looking forward to the European Championships already.
Ellen Hanisch there from Fußballthesen.com. Let's bring this back to the winners, though. Sweden, look, how much importance do we now place on that seemingly at the time weird decision by their manager, Peter Gerhardsen, to rest so many players against the USA? Final group game that happened.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, a lot of the media attention in England has been on the Phil Neville squad rotation, but Sweden have been quietly getting on with it themselves, as well as the kind of carbohydrate consumption and expulsion.
I'm glad you remembered that, Kerry.
I've thought about nothing else since you mentioned it. It's a horrifying, horrifying picture. But yeah, you know, it's a squad tournament, and the rotation and the freshness, I think, is really important. Obviously, we've seen the past few games, the USA question marks over the fitness of some of their players. Germany obviously wheeling out Marijan, who is injured. And yeah, Sweden being able to rely on fit players at this stage of the competition, and also players ready to step in after suspensions, as we talked about with Rolfo. Yeah, it's going to be key.
Group F, not the group of death.
The group of life.
both USA and Sweden emerging thus far unscathed from Group F. Well, talking of Fs, you'll love this, Kerry. At the match was Swedish football journalist Frida Fagerlund.
I love a bit of alliteration.
I can barely describe the feeling. I'm totally overwhelmed. At the same time, I'm not as surprised, to be honest. I felt quite calm during the whole game because they seem to have control of it. And, I mean, that is a huge surprise. At the same time, there's such a confidence in this Swedish team. And they just keep amaze me. So, I mean, now I feel that it can go, if not all the way, then I'm sure they can reach the finals. That's how I feel at the moment.
I loved your tweet at the end of it saying, do you understand how big this is? We have a bit of a love here at the Offside Rule for Peter Gerhardsen for his quote before saying that his players need to expel every carbohydrate. I'm reading that we've got a new one from him saying, there's not a single mitochondria in us that's content. We're going to go for it. Is he like a part-time biologist? Where does this all come from?
I don't know. He's such a... me and my colleagues actually said that before the press conference. We weren't sure, you know, what articles to write. But then we said to each other that Peter always says something that is good in writing. Because he's just... It's like, almost like he wants to give us something. He wants to give us, the journalists, something. And he wants to be, he's quite a funny guy. I actually think that the players really, really like him. And they're so loyal to him and really do everything he says. I mean, that, of course, is one of the reasons that they've reached the semifinals.
Aside from talking about mitochondria then, what else has Peter been saying post-match about this win?
Actually, he seemed quite calm as well. A bit too calm, I feel. Because, I mean, of course, this is a huge thing, but he has all his force is on the semifinals now. And they've been quite good at that after the win against Denmark as well when they qualified to the World Cup. They were very like, you know, okay, this was a good win, but now we're focusing on the World Cup. And I think that's the mindset of true winners. And that is the reason for why I feel that, I mean, this Swedish team, they're going to go into the game against the Dutch and be all confident that they can reach the final, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. What was the expectation for the Swedish team before the tournament started?
I think that the general opinion was that Sweden were going out in the last 16, I think. But, I mean, us journalists, we've been saying this whole time that, well, we are going to reach the quarterfinals, but then we're probably going to end up against Germany and then we will be heading home again. But apparently not. The Swedish teams, they aren't finished yet. And I'm very, very happy about that.
Swedish football journalist Frida Fagerlund there. Thanks very much to her. All this means that Sweden are in the Olympics and Germany will not be defending their gold medal. Ooh, Carrie.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think coming from an English football perspective, we sometimes overlook how important the Olympics is as a competition for women's football globally.
Can I ask you, is it the only way to qualify for the Olympics if you're a European team?
Yeah,
that's the only way.
That's how UEFA use the World Cup as a qualifying competition, essentially.
So if you don't qualify for the World Cup, you've got no chance at the Olympics.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's no... Okay, fine.
That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. It just sounded a bit do or die to me. It just sounded a bit like that's your one and only chance.
Yeah, I think it's obviously because Europe has decent domestic leagues quite often and it's quite a long season. So, you know, other federations have qualifying competitions, I believe. And I've seen a tweet from Abby Wambach during the rounds today and she's saying, you know, it's really unfair that it is do or die and it's so much is placed on a couple of matches. But yeah, well, I don't know where else you'd fit a qualifying tournament in to the European football season.
And there's an additional irony here that Germany-Sweden was the last Olympic final as well, which Germany won. So maybe a small measure of revenge there for Sweden in the Olympic arena.
Well, the revenge could get bigger. Who knows? Who are Sweden set to face next in the semi-finals? Well, a choice between the Netherlands and Italy, who faced off in Valenciennes. All I love makes the next Yay, the left-right dance continues to gather apace at this Women's World Cup after the Netherlands dispatched of Italy 2-0 in pretty routine style with, surprise, surprise, two headers. Sherida Spitzer, the provider for Vivian Miedema, and defender Stephanie van der Gracht. So the Dutch make the semi-finals and it's arrivederci Italy. Carrie, they got the goals they needed, but the Dutch still not 100%, are they?
This was not their best performance this afternoon. This was not their finest hour and a half. Yeah, it just didn't seem to all come together today. I don't know whether it was the heat, because obviously the heat has been absolutely blistering in France this weekend.
It was very slow, wasn't it, the first half?
It was sluggish, it was pedestrian, and yeah, that first half was a poor half of football.
The Netherlands, though, Tim, still with that same attacking lineup. They will not budge.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like Serena Weigman has some kind of exploding collar, and if the Netherlands, if she changes the starting lineup, it detonates or something. It's really, really strange. I've watched Netherlands a lot over the last 2 years since they won the Euros, and actually this was entirely in keeping with how they always play. I don't really understand what Serena Weigman is ever trying to do with them, other than to say, I've got lots of really good players, I'm just going to throw them out there and hope they do something. But in fairness, I think in the second half they came out much, much better. And the game really changed when they brought Bierenstein on for Van der Sanden, who's had a really poor tournament, I think. And I really think that when it comes to the semi-final, they have to look at whether that's the change to the starting lineup that Serena Weigman finally makes.
But Bierenstein, I think, has worked really well as that kind of impact sub,
yes,
which I don't think Van der Sanden would do in quite the same way. I mean, when she's come on and she's really run at teams in those closing stages, particularly in these weather conditions, I wonder whether that might affect team selection too.
It just takes them a while to get going, doesn't it? 7 of Netherlands' 9 goals at this tournament have arrived in the second half, and it's almost like, I mean, I actually thought, well, perhaps that's a genius move. Perhaps they were just conserving their energy in the first half, letting it play out, letting it work its way through until they upped their game when they needed to up their game and didn't feel like they had to, you know, utter an exertion of breath before then.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, at the end of the day, it's 2-0, job done, semi-finals. So we can't really sit here and pick too many holes in it, because if that is the plan, then they've executed perfectly.
Sad to see Italy out of the tournament though, Tim.
Yeah, they were the team that I think had impressed me the most up to this point, to be honest. But in this game, I don't know. I think they froze a little bit. I think they really missed Girelli up front.
Barbara Bonnen, she was injured, wasn't she?
Yeah. Barbara Bonnensea went off quite early. Yeah. And that's two out of that really, really good front three that I think set this tournament alight. And I don't know if that was the kind of issue for them or whether they just psychologically froze, because they never really looked in this game, even when Netherlands didn't look in the game either.
And they lost that lovely sense of freedom that they've been playing with in the earlier stages of this tournament. Aurora Galli, by the way, came on for Girelli. Previously, the side super sub with 3 goals, she started in Girelli's place, but they just couldn't do it, could they? Post-match, Serena Weigman said, "We've had some moments where we were lucky." This is, of course, about the Dutch, but there's such a great team spirit and there's such a great belief that we can perform well. The word proud is more suitable than surprised. Meanwhile, Miedema said, "I didn't expect to be in the semi-finals of this World Cup. We've been complaining that we're not playing the best football, but in the end, we're in the semis." That sounds so German, doesn't it? Are the Netherlands in danger of becoming the new Germany?
Oh, I love that idea. No, I don't think the Netherlands will become the new Germany, exactly. I think they're far too interesting to watch most of the time. Oh, burn. No, but I completely get what Miedema means. We've talked before about, they said that they weren't expecting it, the fact that they'd made a World Cup and this was going to be kind of their progression tournament. So, yeah, I guess if they're treating it as a bonus and they haven't got any expectations, you know, you have a certain level of, I guess, liberty.
Yeah. Italy have tweeted, "This isn't the end, it's just the beginning." And there is, you know, part of this Italian storyline is the sense of legacy. There were some great figures, actually, about how TV audiences over there have really swelled before Italy's last game. So we'll know about this game, obviously, in the coming days. But for Italy's group stage meeting with Brazil, that was 36 times the figure that was previously the highest audience watching a women's football match match on Italian TV, and that was the 2011 World Cup final between the USA and Japan. So great to see records being broken over there in Italy. And I really hope we see Italy again. I hope they get to the Euros, and I hope we get to see more of them. Of course, it also means that the Netherlands qualify for the Olympics. So another one to add there to the Olympic rota. Well, at the game, commentating for Fox Sports TV, Derek Ray. I've got to find out how hot it was in Valenciennes and the effect that that had on the game. And did you get a cooling break as well as the players? That's very important for me to ask.
Well, we certainly have plenty of water bottles, and I have the factor 50 at the ready. Yeah, it was one of those days that was very difficult for everyone. I felt especially sad for the fans who were on the far side, who'd paid their money and were trying to basically find cover because it was so hot. The sun was just baking down on them, temperature of around 33 degrees Celsius, and we knew the cooling breaks were going to be called for. And I think it did ruin the game a little bit in the first half. The pace was very leisurely and possibly contributed to Italy's demise in the end, because it looked to me as though they just ran out of petrol in that second half.
Mm. Certainly, Netherlands seemed like they were trying to keep it cool for the first half, not really producing very much. And then quite a textbook performance from them in the end, because up they pop with another two headers to add to their tally to take the victory. It sort of came from nowhere. I mean, they were much more impressive after the break, but based on the first half, I wasn't sure whether we were going to end it having to go to extra time.
Yeah, I had the same feelings, Kate. I thought that the Netherlands were a bit ordinary in the first half, and maybe credit is due to Italy for neutralising them. But as the game got older, the Dutch got better. In fact, even right at the start of the second half, you could sense the difference. Mm. But I still think that there are one or two doubts about the Dutch. I'm not sure that they've actually played their very best football yet. And they are, I think, going to have to up their game if they have designs on getting to the final.
Well, we can't have you on, Derek, without talking about this very enticing semi-final ahead as the USA take on England. So perhaps some split loyalties for you. I know you watched England the other night, and of course you've been across USA as well. What are you expecting from this? Are the media and are the American public as confident in the American team as the American team is in itself?
Yeah, I think they are. I think it's something that has just grown over the last 20 years. I think there's utter confidence with regard to the US women's national team. And I think that is also reflected in the belief by the fans of the team. I think we saw in this match against France just how professional they are and how much they are all business. The US weren't necessarily pretty in the game, but they were gritty. And they did demonstrate all the qualities that they have from top to bottom in that side. So I don't think England will hold any fears for the USA, but I think there'll be tremendous respect for England.
Yeah.
So I think this will be a harder test, actually, for the US than the French test was, because I don't think England will go into it feeling inferior at all.
And will the USA fear or be wary of any part of this England side or set up any of the personnel? Have you heard any kind of murmurings? I don't suppose the American team would ever vocalise it, but, you know, certainly amongst the media there, are they nervous about any aspect of the game?
I think everyone's talking about Lucy Bronze because she certainly came to life in the match against Norway in La Havre, and we know how good a player she is, but she maybe hadn't quite been on it in the previous matches. I know that her running statistics weren't quite as impressive as normally would be the case. But it's that right-hand side, isn't it, with Bronze and
Paris
running at you. Now, that's going to be fascinating because Crystal Dunn in the game against France is absolutely fabulous.
She did.
You know, there's a player who Jill Ellis always wants to get into the team. She's sort of ended up at left-back as opposed to necessarily being the player you would say that is a left-back. I mean, she could play just about anywhere. But that's going to be really interesting to watch, to see how she copes dealing with those two players and when they run at you. And I thought they did that especially well in the first half against Scotland in the opener for England. I thought the two of them were just devastating and gave poor old Nicola Docherty a devil of a time. So if they can do that, if they can combine to such good effect, and if Jill Scott continues to play consistently as she has done, if Ellen White continues to score the goals as she has done, then you know, England have enough about them to make it interesting.
Derek Ray there over in France for Fox Sports TV. More on England USA in just a moment. Donc laisse-moi te chanter. It's the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition with myself, Kate Borsay, in the studio today, the marvellous Carrie Dunn and the marvellouser Tim Stillman. We need to talk England-USA. Let's expand on this. But a little touch of honesty, first of all. Of course, it's exciting to be in the semi-finals, but reality check, this was the minimum requirement. So why are we getting our knickers in such a twist?
Because we're English football fans and this is what happens. We get overexcited by minimal performances and minimal requirements. And then we get really disappointed when then that doesn't get any better.
Blimey. Carrie's in a great mood about this one. Tim, it's also because we're playing the USA, right? So this is the ultimate matchup for England, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Phil Neville talks about the USA a lot. He kind of talks about their mentality. Since he's taken this job, he talks about their mentality. He really uses them as a reference point. And I think he's been building up to a game like this for a long, long time. He obviously sees them as the benchmark, which, you know, let's face it, they've been for many, many years now. And I think this is probably the matchup that he really wanted as well. And he talks a lot about the, you know, the players testing themselves against the best. And I think in particular, Phil Neville was very, very excited about this game.
And I guess he's excited to see the best of his players and what they can produce. You know, him as a manager getting that out of the players, but also on an individual level, how his players can produce. What are the differences between the two sides? So how do we call this? You know, we know the USA are the ultimate team. They have this strong sense of self-belief. They've been dominating for years and years now. England are newer into this scene, but revived under Phil Neville. But what are the key differences between these two sides, Carrie?
I think one of the interesting points we've noticed over this tournament, and actually a little bit previously, is the way that Jill Ellis uses her squad. She likes to fit people into roles that maybe you wouldn't expect to see them in. So Crystal Dunn, for example, playing at left back and doing a pretty sterling job against Diani, for example. That will be fascinating to see how that fits up against England's right side, who played so well against Norway.
Nikita Paris will be up against her, yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to seeing, that kind of test that Phil Neville refers to.
Tim, for you, a key difference between the two sides?
I find it really difficult to say, actually, because I still can't really pin down a style for England. I can't really pin down what they do. And I don't necessarily mean that entirely as a criticism. They're a bit of a kind of chameleonic side. I mean, I think physically the two teams can match each other now. And actually that's going to be a really big challenge for the US over the next decade or so. As these leagues in Europe professionalise and become bigger, their kind of physical advantage might go away a little bit. But I think I'd come back to the psychological side again. And this is what Phil Neville talks about a lot, that USA just give you that sense they've been there and done it. And, you know, England, they've been to a few semi-finals now. They're no strangers to this stage.
Yeah.
They're not newcomers here. But what I think he'll really, really want is just them to get over this line. Maybe a bit like the Netherlands, you know. Netherlands at Euro 2017 didn't have much of a history, but they got over that line. And you can see them in this tournament now, even when they don't play well. They give you the sense that they can do something.
I think it's interesting also that a lot of the players, the England players, in their media rounds in the past couple of weeks have talked about the importance of the psychologist team with the England camp. I think it's also interesting that the powers that be have requested that these psychologists aren't actually named. They're supposed to be backstage staff. It's not, they're not kind of frontline people. But clearly the psychologists are playing a big role with the players. I mean, Nikita Paris was asked whether she would be talking to a psychologist after her penalty miss, and she was like, no, what would I want to see a psychologist for?
Why?
Well, that was a much better accent than I could even ever attempt,
Kate. Why would I want to do that? I was going to ask you, actually, how do England get past this all-out American head swell? Because the Americans are not afraid of telling us how good they are, how much they believe in themselves. I mean, they are unashamedly ballsy about it.
They're very American, aren't they, the Americans?
But they're even more American than I could imagine Americans could be. I mean, they are literally without any self-effacedness at all, which is what Brits are known for, right? They have none of that whatsoever.
So you're not going to out-American the Americans, are you? So you need to go in with a quiet level of confidence,
yeah,
I think. And the kind of idea that you want to trip this lot up And
oh, you so want to trip them up. In fact, Carrie and I...
Don't tell people
I
this.
Should reveal that before the France-USA game, Carrie and I concocted a plan. We said we wanted USA to win, even though it meant dumping France out, which I am very sorry about. But we wanted the USA to win because we wanted England to then show the USA a lesson. But it is a tall task. I wonder, is it time for Phil Neville to get out of his locker a bit of the Sir Alex mind games?
I don't think so. Although he's been quite bullish, but for quite a long time now. And he says, you know, when he talks to the media, he says, I've been talking to them about winning this for a long time since I came into the job. All the talk's been about winning it. And I feel like he's almost trying to copy the US maybe in that kind of bullish attitude and, you know, saying things like, I'm not embarrassed about saying that we should be winning it. And when they got
but
to the semi-final.
He's been very respectful towards America, though, hasn't he? He hasn't really.
You have to be. You have
he hasn't
to be.
Said anything where you've gone, ooh, clever.
It's interesting as well because, say, Jill Ellis has taken a lot of stick from American fans and American media. Phil Neville seems to actually really rather respect her and rather like her. He's been talking on the television this afternoon about her being very welcoming and kind of giving lots of advice when he first took over the job and when they first met at the She Believes Cup. So that's quite intriguing to me, actually.
Well, let's get the word from the England camp now. We're joined by Katie Wyatt, Telegraph Women's football reporter. We are previewing really an England team here who are getting into uncharted territories when it comes to not just playing at a semi-final, that happened in 2015, but also playing a team like the USA and the amount of confidence and the amount of balls, I suppose, the USA have got. Does that get into the England mentality?
I think to a certain extent it does. I think it's impossible to sort of look at them and what they've achieved and what they stand for and the way that they conduct themselves without sort of being taken aback by it to a certain extent and admiring it. But I think they're under no illusions about how difficult the challenge ahead is, because Nikita Powers was saying about that game against Japan at the last World Cup when they were so unlucky to go out and was such a good opportunity to get to the final. So I think they know full well that the USA or France, and obviously now they've probably got the tougher of the two, would have been a really difficult challenge for them. But I think the way that they prepare and how grounded they are is probably something that they're not kind of get too lapped up in all of the politics behind the America side and all of their reputation as well.
Yeah. England are going to have to be really careful, aren't they, about these periods where they appear to lack energy, about perhaps areas of space which open up that shouldn't, because the USA are going to capitalise on those, aren't they? They're going to jump in and they're going to do what the USA do. Are we going to see any personnel changes? Do you think it's really the role of those players on the field to keep tight? Does that mean that we lose a bit of flair? How's Phil going to kind of manage this?
One of the things that we've been talking about quite a lot is that in this heat, it is very difficult for a team that play with the energy and the tempo and the intensity that England do to realistically ask them to sustain that over 90 minutes when you're playing in temperatures that are touching 30. It's just not sort of realistic or a fair expectation. But at the same time, they then sort of shoot themselves in the foot a bit, because they concede possession and they've got to work hard to get it back. So I think that who's going to sort of say to them, you know, possession is so important for you to look after, because otherwise you're just going to tire yourselves out constantly trying to recover the ball. But I think as well for England's team, attack is sort of the best form of defence, because one, if you've got the ball, the other team can't hurt you. But then two, if you've got players like Lucy Bronze and Nikita Paris that are going at them and just loving, torturing them as they have done for a lot of teams in this tournament, then it's just going to be a real mark of how far England have come, and it could fancy them against a lot of teams. It's a difficult one to sort of say who we would pick, and as it always is with the Neville side, but I think that he will be very clear in his own mind of the things that have caused them issues in the past and just how much they're going to have to eradicate those in the next few days when you're playing a team that are just almost as perfect all over the park as America are.
You're travelling to Lyon tomorrow. How are you getting there? And are you looking forward to another one of your World Cup epic journeys? I know you've been pinging around all over France.
Yeah, it's been quite interesting. We were sort of joking about yesterday that there are so many host cities, and we've done Nice, Le Havre, Nice, Valenciennes, back to Le Havre, so we've sort of pinged around the same ones. But Lyon is I'm doing a drive and then a flight, so Lyon's a really it's so great, because I've been there for the show and Chelsea were in the Champions League, and it's just a really nice city, a very different city. They've got a zoo that's free, they've got pedalos, they've got really nice public parks. So it's a lot of the cities, like Havre's been quite a strange one. Nice is obviously really nice, but Lyon's probably my favourite of all the cities that I've visited in doing this job. So I'm sort of bigging it up to everyone and saying, you need to go to this place and you need to go to that place.
Thanks very much to Katie Wyatt of The Telegraph there. I'd like matchups that you're looking forward to, because this is where it gets really exciting. We've already mentioned Paris versus Dunn, haven't we? Who else are we looking forward to seeing?
I think for me, Julie Ertz versus Jill Scott.
Oh, yes.
In the midfield. I think, you know, England have been a little bit maybe up and down in, you know, in the scope of 90 minutes. Their performances have kind of spiked and dropped a bit. But I think Jill Scott's one of the few players who's just shown a completely high level the whole way through. And she's got that kind of experience. And I think her versus Julie Ertz in that kind of central midfield, I think that's a fascinating matchup.
I'll be interested to see whether Alex Morgan actually starts. If she does, how is she going to be dealt with by England centre-halves? Yeah. Presumably going to be Steph Horton and Millie Bright. But we don't know, because, again, they weren't fully fit the other night, but they still played. So, yeah, that would be very interesting to me if all of them play.
How is Lucy Bronze going to contain Megan Rapinoe?
That's going to be fascinating.
But actually,
isn't
Lucy
it?
Bronze will love this, because she loves a challenge. She
really
loves
does.
A task.
But then so does Megan Rapinoe.
It is true. We'll be delighted to know that Zac Efron's tweeted after the USA made it to the semi-finals after defeating France, and says, "I'm dyeing my hair purple." In respect, that's a rubbish accent.
That was a really bad Zac Efron.
Apologise. Shall I try again? No, I don't think I dare. And the USA women's home jersey is now the number one soccer jersey, men's or women's, ever sold on Nike.com in one season. It'll set you back $90, but it's a nice one.
It is. It's a nice jersey. But again, that shouldn't really be a surprise. Having them available for sale and that quantity for sale is probably the surprise. Not that they actually sold. The USA women's national team is the most successful team in America.
Who's going to have the best fan backing at this game?
Oh,
I still think the US might. Yeah.
Come on, England fans. You've got to book yourself on a flight. Get over to Lyon and back the team. That will be interesting. Who's going to make the most noise? All right, your work is almost done. Let's remind ourselves of the semi-finalists. USA take on England and Sweden take on the Netherlands. And I want predictions, please. Not just any old predictions. Oh, no, I'll throw you a curveball. I want your two finalists, please. Who are we going to be watching on Sunday, the 7th of July? Carrie Dunn.
Netherlands, England.
Oh, Tim.
I think Netherlands, USA, but I'll caveat that by saying I think I got all of the quarterfinals pretty much wrong. So look forward to Sweden versus England.
Well, here's something that might persuade you otherwise. This year's Eurovision Song Contest, Sweden and the Netherlands were the last two in contention for first place. Holland won, United Kingdom finished last.
But how did the USA do?
Sadly, they don't get to have their say. Well, it's exciting and unpredictable, but that's how we like it. All right, get ready for those final matches by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Offside Rule Pod, and on our website too, offsideruledpodcast.com. Plenty of reviews, teams of the various stages of this competition, and build up to the semi-finals and final. Tim and Carrie will see you both again next week for the semi-finals. We'll speak again, listeners, after the big one, England versus USA. Until then, au revoir.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.